The material in this podcast is for information purposes only. It does not represent the opinions of Vested Finance and is not intended to be investment advice. We recommend you to consult with a financial advisor before committing to any financial decisions. Hi everyone, I'm Kaihan, co-host of the Vested Finance podcast. Welcome to episode number 22. Joining us today is Jarwin, co-founder of Vested Finance.
Great to be recording another podcast this week, Kai. What shall we discuss today?
Well, we're going to cover mainly two topics. The first being electric vehicles, or EVs, in relation to smartphones, and the second being Coinbase's recent IPO announcement. Let's dive right into it and talk about EVs first. Are EVs the new smartphones? To answer this, we'll briefly talk about car making from past to present. Now, some of us may have a vague idea of car making as a whole, but suffice to say, it is a challenging industry. Not only does it involve a long and complex supply chain, but making an internal combustion engine, or ICE, is pretty difficult to accomplish. In this modern age, if you want to start your own car company, you must be able to master both. Little wonder then that until Tesla went public in 2003, there hadn't been a single car company that had successfully IPO'd since 1956.
Yeah, and to understand why this is the case, we must understand how internal combustion engines, or as you say, ICE, work. These ICE engines are exceedingly complex and work by controlling explosion or combustion of fossil fuel and translating the energy output into mechanical motion. So in the accompanying article that we have for this podcast, we have a GIF to kind of illustrate how an internal combustion engine works. But for the purpose of this podcast, imagine you start with mixing air and fuel at the proper ratio and then injecting that into the piston or the combustion chamber. You pressurize the chamber and then you add an electric spark, which ignites the mixture, creating a combustion event. The combustion pushes the piston down, creates pressure and heat, and the action of pushing this piston down rotates the crankshaft, which then translates into mechanical motion that propels the car or the truck forward. And then the exhaust from the combustion is then pushed out of the cylinder into your tailpipe. So that's one cycle. And for one cylinder, and typically any passenger vehicles have anywhere between four cylinders for a typical sedan or passenger car to 12 cylinders for high performance vehicle, right? Now, you not only have to repeat this combustion process 1,000 times a minute and at a faster speed at higher vehicle speed and load, but you also have to create an engine that is reliable, stable, has low noise and vibration and heat, and the engine has to last more than a decade. It also has to meet the ever-increasing emission standards imposed by the different governments around the world.
You know, decades of research and development are needed in order to master the making of the internal combustion engine. Currently, the US, Japan, and Germany, unsurprisingly, are the top three in ICE production for passenger vehicles. Even China, with its manufacturing prowess, has not mastered ICE production. Its domestic car market is dominated by foreign brands.
Right. And because of the difficulty of making internal combustion engines, leading car companies always build their engines in-house. They integrate the design and then the engine production closely to the rest of the vehicle to improve performance and fuel efficiency, and outsource the rest of the car production to multiple vendors, commoditizing those aspects. So the windshield wipers, the horns, commoditizing those aspects. And because they control the aspect of the car that is hardest to make, they are associated with the brand that the consumer purchases from. The Germans, the Audis, Volkswagen, and BMW of the world are very famous for their six-cylinder engines. Meanwhile, Honda is very famous for their robust and high-performance four-cylinder engine, and so on. So the automakers capture most of the value.
But this is coming to a change. As the world transitions to electric vehicles, the internal combustion engine is becoming less and less important to the production of a car. Now, the implications of this are massive. For starters, the electric motor is much simpler to build than the internal combustion engine. If we compare the two, the traditional ICE has more than 2,000 moving parts, while the electric motor that propels an EV has about 20.
Yes, and this shift in the level of difficulty in making the engines means that almost anyone can learn how to make an electric motor. You will have more contract manufacturers as a result. The critical moat that the traditional automakers have is no longer relevant. And because there's no longer internal combustion engines, the car design is actually simpler. the design can be modularized. You can build a skate for an electric vehicle, which is just the chassis and the battery, separately from the interior of the car. So this is kind of like the base plane of the car with four wheels. Between the wheels, you have the motor and then the battery in the middle of the four corners of the skate. Conceivably, as a car brand, you can call your contract manufacturers of choice, and all you have to do is pick the motor size, the battery size, and the wheelbase from a menu. As a result, contract manufacturers are starting to crop up to help you build electric cars. All of a sudden, building a car at scale is no longer difficult. You're beginning to see this played out in the space. The two leading Chinese electric vehicle makers, NIO and XPeng, both do not build their own cars. They rely on contract manufacturers. This means that their businesses are more capital light, but they also have less control over the process. Currently, they're still not profitable. Apple has been rumored to be in negotiations with multiple contract manufacturers to build its EV cars. Fisker signed a deal with Foxconn to build their cars. And Foxconn is also providing EV manufacturing services to Byton, another of Chinese car makers.
Yeah, but if manufacturing is outsourced to third parties, what will these EV car brands have in terms of a defensible moat? I mean, I think we've seen a similar dynamic in the smartphone market in terms of the rise of contract manufacturers in the world of electronics called EMS or Electronic Manufacturing Services. For example, we have Foxconn. All of this led to the explosion of smartphone hardware. Even Google entered the space by providing the free-to-use Android operating system. And that means that everyone can launch their own smartphones. In the world of abundant smartphones, what happens is that components become commoditized. And since all these handset makers do not make their own operating system, or OS, the device experiences are very similar.
That's true. And the one handset maker that has a tight control of its product in terms of hardware and software is Apple. Apple continues to have tight control over its industrial design, number one. Number two, sales and distribution via Apple Store. And three, the operating system via iOS, creating a unique user experience. Now, as a result, Apple, although generating about a third of the global smartphone revenue, captures about two-thirds of the profit of the industry. No one else comes close. At the bottom of the industry, some handset makers such as LG makes a paltry 1.2 cents per smartphone sold. And this is a figure from 2015. Since then, that division hasn't turned a profit. Going back to your point, right, the value chain of electric vehicles, if the device assembly, the manufacturing is contracted out, what does the reshuffling of that supply chain look like? Will it resemble the smartphone supply chain? If we fast forward 3 to 5 years with the electric vehicles removing the internal combustion engine complexity bottleneck, the electric vehicle supply chain will be reshuffled. So one exception to this is Tesla, right? As the first mover in the space, Tesla has tight control of its R&D and design, vertically integrates and controls its own manufacturing, and it has tight control over its own distribution and writes its own software. So does this make Tesla the Apple of EV? But what about everyone else? Will they be overly reliant on third-party contract manufacturers and build electric vehicles from the same part bins, creating non-differentiated solutions, similar to the plethora of Android smartphones out there?
So if we draw the same parallel, the key missing ingredient would be, who will be the Android for the EV? Who will create an operating system to run the car? I feel that to avoid arriving at the same fate as Android device makers, the non-Tesla EV brands need to not only have their own unique design, but also create their own EV software. But can they do this?
Well, in many ways, the operating system for the EV is much more complex than the smartphone. Nevertheless, the reason it has been really difficult to displace iOS and Android as the dominant smartphone operating system is not because the level of complexity, but it's because the network effect of the App Store. Many have tried to introduce their own operating system for the smartphone and failed. Microsoft tried to do it, Firefox, even Samsung have tried. But going back to EV, it's still unclear though, what will be the network effect in the EV operating system? Will there be an app store in the car? Android Auto has a software for current car, which is independent of electric vehicles. Apple has a similar software, even Amazon. But what is clear is that it will be harder to make the operating system for the car because the software platform will have to control the car's battery, electric motor, cooling, infotainment, and possibly any add-ons such as autonomous driving. So the entity that might be best positioned to develop this software platform might be the contract manufacturers themselves. In the reshuffling of this automotive value chain, Foxconn is trying to move vertically into the software platform as well. So as part of its recently announced manufacturing as a service platform for electric cars, it announced that it would also deploy an open source operating system layer to control the car. It's called the MIHEV Open Platform. Now, its goal, statedly, is to become the Android of electric cars. So if Foxconn becomes the Android of electric cars, what will make Fisker, who recently announced that they'll outsource their manufacturing to Foxconn, or the plethora of other electric car makers, how will these electric car brands avoid the fate of the many Android smartphone makers?
I have to say, up until recently, it never occurred to me that a link could be made between smartphones and EV production. That's also something for our listeners to ponder over.
Right, and I also think that the Chinese government sees this as a massive opportunity. They were not able to become the world supplier of internal combustion engines. As you mentioned, the top three exporters of car engines are the US, Japanese, and the Germans. But right now, China is spending the most compared to other countries in creating the largest domestic market for electric cars. With this investment, the Chinese government also demands that all cars sold in China are made with Chinese components. This incentivizes the growth of the domestic Chinese supply chain ecosystem for EVs. So moving forward, as with the smartphone supply chain, they want to become the global supply chain center for electric cars, providing and exporting components for the rest of the world.
Let's shift gears to Coinbase. As we know, Coinbase is the premier crypto trading app in the US. They've recently announced their intention to go public via direct listing. Though that said, the actual date is probably still a few weeks away.
Yep. In recent weeks, we talked about how Tesla and Square and some other public companies are investing in Bitcoin as part of their short-term holdings, right? But if investors want to get exposures to Bitcoin from the US without owning Bitcoin directly, then investments in Coinbase might do the job. In the early days, Coinbase was more focused on enabling Bitcoin as digital money or a medium of exchange, and gained early traction when it was able to acquire large businesses to accept the then nascent cryptocurrency through its Bitcoin wallet. But as we discussed 2 weeks ago, adoption of Bitcoin as a replacement of money has not taken off. As a medium of exchange, Bitcoin is too volatile and too slow. So Bitcoin's throughput for its network is about 7 transactions per second, while Visa's network can handle up to 24,000 transactions per second. So if you want to be the global payment rails, you have to be in the same magnitude as Visa's. Instead, Bitcoin has emerged as an alternative store of value, a vehicle for speculative investment, and Coinbase was there to take advantage of the trend.
Well, it's as we said before, it's best to sell pickaxes during a gold rush. In a way, that has become the primary method that Coinbase uses to make money. Now, when a user transacts, Coinbase generates revenue from primarily two sources. The first being the margin fee. Coinbase makes money by adding margin, or spread, to the market exchange rate. The second is commission fee, a variable percentage fee it charges on the value of the transaction. As a result, the company makes close to 0.6% total cryptocurrency transacted on its platforms.
Right. Investing in Coinbase at this time only guarantees uncertainty and volatility. Let's briefly look at the revenue, valuation, and regulatory risk. If you look at the revenue numbers from Coinbase, some of these are estimated because it goes back to a few years when it was a private company that it didn't disclose in the S1, in the prospectus. But 2016, it's estimated that the company made about $17 million from the retail trading activity. And then in 2017, when we had the last crypto bubble where Bitcoin price spiked to $20,000, it made about $1 billion in trading activities, almost $1 billion. And then when the bubble deflated in 2018, Coinbase's revenue went down by about half, so about $520 million or so. And then 2019, it's relatively flat. 2020, it went close to $1.3 billion as disclosed in the S1. And 2020, coincidentally, was also a very good year for Bitcoin. So if you decide to invest in Coinbase, because the nature of Coinbase's revenue is highly tied to the value of Bitcoin, right? Because it made money based on the spread and then trading activity, and the trading activity itself is tied to the value of Bitcoin, the company's earnings will be highly volatile and will be highly dependent on the performance of Bitcoin itself. So revenue spikes when the price of crypto runs up and declines sharply when trading activity falters. Number two, the valuation at this time is also insanely high. In 2020, as I mentioned above, the company generated about $1.3 billion in revenue. Recently, in recent private transactions, the company's private shares exchanged hands, which gave the company an implied valuation of $100 billion. That gives the company a revenue multiple of 77 times revenue multiple. Now, to put that in perspective of how high that is, even Tesla, a highly valued company, has about 20 times last 12 month revenue multiple. So Coinbase is almost 4 times higher than Tesla. And finally, in addition to the revenue volatility and valuation risk, Coinbase also has significant regulatory risk from the CFTC, which is the Commodities Future Trading Commissions, which regulates cryptocurrencies as they are considered a digital commodity. CFTC is mentioned 31 times in the S1.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, that covers both EVs and Coinbase in a nutshell. As always, Darwin, thank you for your insight in both the finance and tech space.
Yeah, that was fun as always, man. Great chatting. Until next week.
To our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. For more insights into markets and emerging technologies, please visit our blog at vested.co.in. As always, take care and stay safe.